Hi, I'm Remy.
And I'm Igor.
And you're in a band called?
Daughter.
Amazing. How'd you name that? No, just kidding. All right. So I don't like typical history. I like revisionist history. And by the way, you're allowed to lie for this question. Lying is permitted. So here's what I know. Music College 2010, London, singer-songwriter originally. It was originally a project, not a band. The poems first, then you picked up, somebody picked up their brother's guitar. I know who that is. So I've just filled in a whole pile of that stuff that people, you know, you've repeated this 64 billion times.
Eleanor has a very, very big obsession with dogs.
Well, I don't know if I'm obsessed. I think that's a slight, slight exaggeration.
And that's a great word you gave her there, obsession. Nice.
But I do have a little thing for, like, especially like the small, silly-looking ones.
The ones that bark and you go deaf?
Yeah, those ones. I like them. I think there's something very, I don't know.
Those are called bark and go deaf dogs. Did you know that?
I didn't know that, but I'm glad.
Yeah, bark and deafers. It's a German dog. So you started working with Igor early on, tons of demos. When did you know that you kind of had what this was to become, and do you still think you don't know?
I think the thing was, when we started, it was, because I asked Igor just to kind of play guitar for a bit and to help me out in that way, because I wanted to obviously expand things sound-wise, because I was just playing acoustic guitar and it was vocals and acoustic, and that was it. And I think it was really when we started kind of just jamming together, and there was just something that was very, like, I think we just had a kind of honesty where we could say, like, this, I love this, or I really don't like that, or we kind of almost were on the same page and we had the same kind of ideas of where things would go arrangements wise and just writing wise. I think it was just like quite a natural way of working with someone and a way of you can kind of be free to do or say whatever you want. And I think I'd never felt comfortable before writing with anyone else, because I was just very solitary, and I still have like a lot of solitude, like with the lyrics. I think that's still gonna,
that's
maybe
still
take
your
a
baby?
Bit of time.
Is it still her
to
baby?
Let someone else in? Yeah.
So it's really tricky to tour and make a full album, hence why there were two EPs, right? And yet what's amazing about the world we live in now, and you know, EPs were originally 45 RPM records that they tried to put two Elvis hits on either side and try to get more publishing money. But an EP now is what a band does to introduce themselves, and that works sometimes, but in your case it really kicked it, didn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think we were really lucky with the reception of both EPs, and it really helped us just have a natural progression towards the album and in our sound as well, and sort of setting a few I guess, like beacons for what was to become the album.
So this is a very different world. You've come into the world in a very different place, because in the old days, you'd put a record out, you'd go to do a gig, and people didn't even, you know, they'd be like, okay, you know, and you got nothing. So tell me what that feels like to be in the world that we're in now, where this is so new, and people are already like, yeah, we know every lyric.
I think you feel obviously massively supported on stage. You feel like people are really interested in the new material as well as the old material. Sometimes we play older songs and it has a really great reception as well. I think it's it's always interesting to like to play something that's new that hasn't been released, and we've done that a few times where we've played songs that are more kind of like B-side songs that maybe no one's really heard. And I think that's always a really interesting thing, because you're kind of playing it afresh and playing it new, and you don't know how people will react. But when you come out with a new album and people know the lyrics and
you're like, wait a minute,
yeah,
this is wild.
It's crazy. It's really cool.
Playing this live requires a certain amount of proper planning, doesn't it? You can't just snap your fingers and get this out live. There's so much work that went into the sound of this, right?
Absolutely, and that's definitely something that we worked really hard on. And because basically the way that songs came up didn't come up in rehearsal room. We didn't tour the songs before we recorded them. It was very much something that happened at home or in the studio. But we always try to keep in our minds, you know, how it was going to translate live as well. So we tried to sort of keep certain limitations. But then when we when it came to rehearsing the songs for the live show, that's when, you know, we started. Really, we had to get in like a fourth musician to help us play everything to have that full sound, because we felt that was really part of our identity, and that would really help also translate the songs live.
But much has been made that you are a couple. Now, what's really interesting about the whole couple thing is that so many bands that have couples, like Wild Bell, who's playing here, they're not couples. So when people try to push that dynamic into the band, being that you were so solitary before this band happened, tell me, how do you react to that? And does it really affect things? I mean, it makes it easier, does it not, in the long run? So if you can have a band battle, at least you can make it personal. As he looks her in the eye to see what the answer should be.
Well, I don't know. Generally, we don't really speak about those things that much.
Sometimes when you start a band, you're in a certain place and you are a couple, and maybe the band goes on and then you're not. And I think that shouldn't be an issue either, really, because it's like, it is all about the music. So
4AD Glassnote, nice company to be in, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Not bad?
No.
Excited about that, yes?
Incredible. I mean, being approached by those two labels is an honor, you know. And yeah, I mean, I still remember when we first met Ed from 4AD. It was just after we played a show in London, and came and introduced himself.
And he came to see you too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't think any of us could believe really what it meant. You know, it was kind of like, oh, I guess someone from 4AD came to our show. You know, wow.
Yeah. But the thing is, actually, we first signed to Glassnote before signing to 4AD. So they, you know, Daniel came really early on, and it was really supportive of what we were doing, and yeah, no, it definitely meant a lot that he was one of the first ones to show, you know, interest.
So I have to go down this road, because one of the things that I always say to bands is I have that three word, whatever it takes, and this cover of that Daft Punk thing has really, I mean, it's great because it's going to get people here. And if this gets people there or that gets people here, that's okay, right?
Yeah, I think people have made a lot out of it, and it wasn't at all planned or anything. We just really liked the song. We had to do a cover of a popular song that, you know, fitted Radio 1. And so we were struggling actually to find something that, you know, kind of spoke to us that Elena could relate to lyrically as well. And then this song came out, and Remy was playing it all the time in our dressing room. It was, you know, it came out 2 days before we covered it in the UK. And we just played it, you know, on repeat 10 times a day. And then we had one day to go in a rehearsal studio to kind of get something ready for the show the next day.
Yeah.
But the rehearsal studio was, you know, in a rehearsal studio. It wasn't, the Maid of Ale was the next day. And so we just worked it up, and in about 3 hours, it kind of just worked. And I think we're just really interested, like you said, in transformative sort of a process, like, you know, whether it's a remix or a cover, like to sort of, you know, almost recycle the music and reuse it in a different way.
But the buzz versus the music, from a review that might have been involved in those initials that I used earlier.
Yeah.
Beauty here in heaps, leaning a lot less on the heartbreak pedal, turning down the reverb, letting wild youth out more. Yeesh.
I mean, that's, you know, it's just, we didn't really think when we made the album. It was very much a natural process, in the sense that we're just doing instinctively what felt good, and that's what felt good. So, I mean, you know, we're very at peace with what we've done, and we're at peace if people think differently of what we should have done, but then at the same time you think, who has the right to tell us what we should do or shouldn't do? Because obviously that's just what we wanted to create.
The role of the critic used to be to inform and to educate, and then just to give an honest opinion.
Yeah.
But not to dig in and try to be a literary giant that's trying to outdo what the band is doing and have it go, hey, look at me.
Yeah.
So the role of the critic has changed.
You're
in that world now.
I used to love reading, actually, reviews of albums, just because I felt like I suddenly had an insight into something, and then I could know whether into that album was I was gonna maybe relate to it in some form of way.
Exactly.
We're also apparently really miserable people, according to that.
We do a thing called a musical sandwich, and it's two of your songs as the bread, and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between.